Welcome to Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. I'll bring you all kinds of stories from all kinds of people. Whether it's a live public conversation and we're speaking from the kitchen table of my 1965 Beeline travel trailer, from the studios or on the streets, please sit back and enjoy the conversation right here this time every week. I spoke to Chris Hill in Yellow Springs, Ohio last September. I was invited there by the Nonstop Art Institute of Yellow Springs, where she is a member, to share Trailer Talks, Frack Talk, Marcella Shale Water Project, the Shale Project, on the main street for 2 days, because their community in Ohio is facing the complicated issues of fracking for natural gas. Chris Hill is a backyard beekeeper and an artist, and she shared with me her passion for beekeeping and how it's intertwined with her art practice, where she explores issues around public and private space. We spoke about local sustainable agriculture and how studies are now showing that agribusiness and monoculture are threatening bee populations and contributing to colony collapse disorder. I'm Sabrina, and my guest is Chris Hill, and we are on the main street of Yellow Springs, Ohio, in front of the Emporium on Xenia Avenue, and it's about 10:30 in the morning on Saturday, September 3rd, and we are talking about beekeeping. Chris is part of Nonstop, which is an art institute here in Yellow Springs, and I am here as their guest and here with the Shale Project. And Chris and I, when I found out that she was a beekeeper, and we found this out when we were riding together in her car and drove by and pulled into this amazing field of sunflowers. Right. And I learned through you, Chris, too, that sunflowers actually turn to face the sun. So this field of thousands of sunflowers was actually, they were all facing the same direction, which was quite incredible. And at that field of the sunflowers were bees. There was a hive.
There was a hive in the field, and there were bees on every single sunflower that we looked at.
Yes, and so I learned that. So my guest is Chris, and we're talking about bees and her beekeeping. Honeybee Facts. This is from the Backyard Beekeepers Association in southwestern Connecticut. Pollen. Bees collect 66 pounds of pollen per year per hive. Agriculture depends greatly on the honeybee for pollination. Honeybees account for 80% of all insect pollination. Without such pollination, we would see a significant decrease in the yield of fruits and vegetables. Honey. Honey is used by the bees for food all year round. There are many types, colors, and flavors of honey. The bees make honey from the nectar they collect from flowering trees and plants. Honey is an easily digestible, pure food. Honey is hygroscopic and has antibacterial qualities. In addition, bees make beeswax, propolis, royal jelly, and also bee venom. About bee venom, it says, although sharp pain and some swelling and itching are natural reactions to a honeybee sting, a small percentage of individuals are highly allergic to bee venom. Bee venom therapy is widely practiced overseas and by some in the USA to address health problems such as arthritis, neuralgia, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and even MS. There are three castes of the honeybee: the queen bee, the worker bee, and the drone bee.
I'm Chris Hill. I live here in Yellow Springs. I work with Nonstop. I'm a media teacher, a media curator, a media artist, and a beekeeper.
And a beekeeper. And we do want to talk about those bees. But to begin, I wanted to thank you
for hosting Trailer Talk.
Oh, you're very welcome.
It's just been great being here. It's really interesting and wonderful, and to meet parts of your community here and to be a part of this. Chris, would you like to talk about bees with me? I'm very interested.
Sure, sure. I've been a beekeeper for about 6 years. I actually got involved with beekeeping before colony collapse disorder, so it's been interesting to watch that transition as so many more people have gotten involved in hobbyists, and not just hobbyists. I mean, I think many of the people in this area take up beekeeping because they want to do it as a small business. A number of them are homeschooling their kids, you know, so there's a lot of people that just feel like they're supporting the environment by doing beekeeping. Actually, my initial interest in it was really, I spent some time in Eastern Europe in the early 90s, and many of the people that I knew had places in the country and kept bees, and there were these little shops that sold beekeeper supplies. Huh. So I became fascinated with this technology, which was a technology that I didn't know at all. I was also fascinated with all these products, you know, like these medicinal creams, and as well as the honeys and stuff like that that people produce there.
I know when I've traveled in different places, parts of Europe, as you mentioned, Mexico, that bees and the benefits of different things that the bees make are very much a part of the cultures.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're antimicrobial. I mean, the wax is, wax and propolis, which they produce and which are used in medicines and creams and that sort of thing. And honey is as well. It's antimicrobial, so it's very healthy stuff.
That's amazing. Yeah. Right. As you mentioned, the propolis, and I know the different creams, and then there's the pollen.
Yeah, yeah,
yes,
yeah,
I was
yeah,
trying
yeah.
to think. I was you're, seeing you're, it in you, my head.
Well, you've I, seen I know, it, you've I, seen them carry it on their back legs when they
right,
yeah.
which is just yeah. incredible. This was, you said, in the early 90s
yeah,
that you
in the early 90s.
First became interested in beekeeping or bees.
I became interested in beekeeping because it was part of this culture in Eastern Europe where people lived in apartments for the most part in the city, and they were crowded. It was difficult to get apartments, so oftentimes two or three generations lived in a small apartment. But then they had a cottage out in the country somewhere, and they kept gardens. It was really, really important to be able to pass on the tradition of growing your own food. And everybody that I knew had cousins and uncles and grandparents who would bring food in from the country. So beekeeping was part of that. And I was interested in, whereas here we think about public space as being primarily urban, not necessarily, but I mean, like now we're sitting on a city street, and in a sense, even though we're in your trailer, we're participating in public space, and Yellow Springs is very much about public space on the main street here. But in Eastern Europe at that time, people had been so protective, and there had been this profound secrecy during socialism. So where people were really more open was in their country spaces. So I was interested in that. I was interested in the country spaces for that reason, as well as for the food that was being produced. So actually, as a media person, I was really interested in beekeeping became one of the things that people produced in this space where they were, you know, more comfortable to speak.
Where was that exactly?
That was in Prague and in Brno in the Czech Republic. But beekeeping is a very important activity throughout Central Europe. So, for example, a lot of people here have bees whose DNA comes from Slovenia. Slovenia is a really important center for beekeeping.
Really?
Yeah, it's actually the place. Well, Slovenia was really important because a really important beekeeper who established beekeeping for the Habsburg Empire did this in Slovenia. But one of the reasons that it is so important is that there's three climates that come together in Slovenia, like the Mediterranean, the Alpine, and another climate that comes across this Hungary. And so the bees that emerged out of that area are very adapted to like this huge range of climate. So it's a very interesting species of bee.
And that species of bee, is that localized? Or you're saying that species has actually somehow migrated or been brought to other parts?
It's been brought to the United States.
Oh, it has?
Yes. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
That's what you
so
meant by that.
Yeah,
here.
So,
you meant here.
Yeah, so a lot of people here have bees. They have either Carniolan bees, which are from Slovenia originally, or Italian bees. Those are the two kinds of bees most people have.
And what are the bees that are from here?
Well, bees are not native to North America. So all honey, there's other pollinators that are native to North America, but honeybees were actually brought over by the European settlers. Yeah, it's interesting. They're not native.
That is so interesting. But so then if you could share with me, what does that mean in terms of, because bees are so important for pollination, for our crops, for our ability to grow and produce food.
Yeah.
But then what was providing that function
before? Right. We think about bees and their importance with food has to do a lot with agriculture, right? So they are actually absolutely critical for pollinating certain plants, but they're... without honeybees, there's other kind of pollinators. There's, you know, bumblebees and butterflies, and the wind pollinates a lot of, you know, things. There's other things that crawl around and carry pollen. But honeybees are incredibly efficient.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's why it's so critical when they begin to die and colony collapse,
exactly,
as you were describing. So when did colony collapse, when did that become something that people were aware of? When did it happen?
Right. I might get this wrong. I think it's like 2008. I believe it's 2007, 2008, something like that. And it was first noticed, and then there's been research. I mean, there's been a couple of things that have affected beekeeping in recent decades. There were varroa mites also. Were not known in North America, and then in the 80s, somehow or another, they also came into this country, or into this continent, really. And they also think that the varroa might play a role in colony collapse.
Oh.
But it seems like it's a configuration of conditions that that really affect the immune system of the bees, and that leads to colony collapse. But there is a virus that they think is associated with it, but all these things like varroa and also agribusiness, the almond crop in California is a particular problem. Okay, so the almond crop in California, the almond trees bloom very early, like in February, and the almonds, they just have acres and acres and acres and miles of almond trees. It's a monoculture. So there's nothing else that's growing except almond trees. So it's not a situation where you can have bees that would, you know, do almond trees in February, but then they'll do something else, you know, in March, and something else in May, and something else in June. So in order to, and almonds are a really big cash crop. So in order to fertilize the almond trees, beekeepers from all over North America truck their bees to California. Oh. They do this for other crops too, but the almonds are particularly problematic because it's so early, and a lot of North American bees aren't really ready to begin their season in February. So they wound up bringing bees in from Australia and New Zealand.
Oh.
And that's where they think that this virus came from. It came to this area in California where all bees from all over North America were for like 2 months, right, to pollinate the almond trees. So all of these bees were infected.
Wow, that's incredible. I know so little about bees. I find them beautiful and fascinating. And then as I learn about what they do, of course, I'm in awe of them. And then honey is something, when it's fresh and raw, is just an incredible sort of thing. And it feels so good on the skin. So, Chris, when did you decide that you were going to get your first bees?
Yeah, well, it was like in 2006. I think that's when it was. And I decided I needed to have a bridge. I needed to go back and think more about my experience in Eastern Europe, and it had been 15 years, and I needed some sort of experiential bridge. As an artist, I needed an experiential bridge to go back, and I had always been fascinated with the beekeeping. So I thought, well, I'll document myself learning beekeeping, and that will be kind of the bridge to me being able to discuss some of these issues of public and private space that I was really interested in. So I started taking beekeeping classes with, there's a beekeepers club in Greene County where we live here in Ohio, and it was a lot of retired farmers, actually, and some master beekeepers. And actually, Ohio has a very important historical bee community. Like, one of the major publications from the late 1800s is in Ohio.
Oh.
And actually, you'll like this. The guy who, it's the AI Root Company, he was friends with the Wright brothers. And of course, the Wright brothers are, you know, from Dayton, which is only like 25 minutes from where we are now.
Amos Root was born in 1839 and lived in Medina, Ohio. He developed innovative beekeeping techniques in the mid-19th century. His trade journal, Gleanings in Bee Culture, shared ideas about contemporary culture. His company, the AI Root Company, was founded in 1869 and manufactured beehives and beekeeping equipment. The company published the magazine Bee Culture and the book ABC of Bee Culture, both of which are still produced today.
Right. So the Wright brothers, when they had their flight in North Carolina, wanted it to be published in Scientific American. And Scientific American refused to publish it. They said, nobody flies. You know, this is kind of like a craze. And so a year later, their good friend A.I. Root published in Gleanings in Beekeeping the first public account of their flight.
Oh, that's incredible.
Isn't that great?
So what year was that? Roughly.
I don't know. Whenever the Wright brothers flew. Uh-oh, I don't
but
know
that's,
that.
That's
yeah.
okay. But
early
that's,
part,
that's
very early
fascinating.
Years of the century. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Wright brothers, Orville and Wilbur, were born in Dayton, Ohio. On December 17, 1903, the Wright brothers made the first flight. They are credited with inventing the first successful airplane, and in 1911, the Wrights' VinFizz was the first airplane to cross the United States.
What is it about public and private space that you feel that the bees are somehow expressing or become representatives of?
Well, part of it was the role that beekeeping played in Eastern Europe, and I was interested in the differences of the way public and private was interpreted in that culture compared to ours. The more I learned about beekeeping, what became very interesting is that the bees themselves have these multiple ways of communicating. So they communicate through this waggle dance, which is kind of amazing. They also communicate through pheromones. They have these incredibly, they have multiple eyes, and there's just all these things about their social system and their individual way in which they perceive the world, which is just incredibly fascinating. So so as a beekeeper, that's the other thing about beekeeping, is that the beekeepers are interesting because they're kind of like, they all invent their own, you can't talk to a beekeeper without them really trying to tell you like something that they've invented it's kind of like, it's like learning a technology. It's like learning how to do radio, like where people teach you, you know, these interesting things that they've learned. You know, I mean, it's really very much, it's like learning a technology.
So what year was it then that you decided, I mean, when you got your first?
I think it was 2006.
Is it that you get your hive? Is that what it is?
Yeah, well, there's different ways of starting.
So,
for
right,
me,
so you mentioned, so 2006 is when you both got them because you had, and also you had been thinking about this connection.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But what happened was, is I had taken a class, but I didn't feel like I was ready to start. And then the guy that I was learning from, who's a master beekeeper, I was following him around because with a video camera. So I was really interested in documenting what he was doing. And one day there was a swarm in his bee yard, which is a natural way that bees reproduce their colonies. So he had a new hive, and he said, why doesn't this be your first hive? And so, you know, it was kind of a very spur of the moment decision, and I took it.
And Chris, what has that been like? I'm Sabrina, this is Trailer Talk, and I have Chris Hill joining me at the kitchen table, and we are talking about bees, actually, which is fascinating, and of course, to me, does tie into issues around the environment and gas drilling and fracking,
right,
and how we connect to our homes and where we live so that it can produce foods and where bees can survive and live,
right,
and they can't if an area is polluted,
right,
is toxic.
Right.
So, Chris, you accidentally got your first hive. And that was back in 2006. Mm. And so what has happened since then? So what has this experience been like? And I understand it's a complex process, really, of somehow caretaking bees.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what has it been like? And have you learned something, or have you even gone more deeply into the world of bees?
Well, I've become, because of colony collapse, it's also another very interesting way of looking at sort of public education and how people become stewards of the land. Like around Yellow Springs is actually quite impressive in terms of people's commitment to the land, commitment to sort of being stewards of various aspects of the land here. So beekeeping, I think, is part of that. And I've seen the local beekeeping club like mushroom. It's just been incredible. That's been very encouraging. And for example, one of my former students, you know, became a beekeeper and lives in Yellow Springs. And so we've, you know, shared information. And I mean, for me, there's many ways in which it's become interesting. I did an art project not in a trailer, but in a phone booth gallery that happened last year, that one of my colleagues, it was her art project, and I did a project in that gallery that was about public speech and beekeeping and postcards. I have used beekeeping as an art project, but aside from that, I'm also just interested. It's kind of like gardening. This was my project, but the phone booth is her project. My colleague Migua Orimo, who's an artist and lives in Yellow Springs, and who's actually sitting outside. And so her gallery was on a street corner here in Yellow Springs, and it was a phone booth, and the exhibition changed every month. And so I did a project that had to do with public and private space and beekeeping, and it was a postcard exchange between me and someone else. I was interested in how postcards are both public and private.
Yes.
And it's private communication in a public space because mm-hmm. people can read it. So, you know, I was playing with these issues yes. of public and private and beekeeping.
Were the postcards correspondence about beekeeping?
Some of yeah, mine were. Yeah.
They were.
Yeah, actually hers, she's not a beekeeper, so she wandered away from, you know, beekeeping and then would come back to it. But yeah, mine were always about beekeeping.
Is a large part of beekeeping for you what they produce, you know, the honey, or is that really not?
Yeah, I don't sell honey. I mean, I consume it and give it away to my friends. So it's, for me, I'm not the most industrious mm-hmm. beekeeper. I am interested in, you know, I'm becoming more interested in propolis as a substance that the bees produce, which seems to have some really important health components to it. I mean, I'm sort of interested in learning more about that. And yeah, and also the social, they're just eminently fascinating, you know, so the whole social, there is a kind of a, I don't want to say communication, that would certainly be wrong, that takes place between beekeepers and bees, but there, you do have to work with each other. I mean, you know, the bees, because of colony collapse and really because of Varroa, bees don't survive very well in the wild anymore. Oh. It used to be if a swarm happened and it set up in a hollow tree, you know, yes. in the woods, that it would survive. But now that with Varroa since the 80s, they usually don't survive for more than a couple of years. The Varroa weakened them. So really, beekeepers are more, need to be intimately involved with bees, with honeybees at this point in time. So there is this way in which you work together. I mean, they respond to situations and you have to respond to them. You have to anticipate some of the things that they do. They always surprise you. And these older beekeepers are great because they've been doing this for 30 years. So they, you know, they've seen it all, you know. Mm-hmm. So even when colony collapse happened, they suggested that there have been these times in the past when there's been something that seemed to be borderline catastrophic. I think that the agribusiness has made colony collapse probably more severe than it might have been if we didn't have,
right.
if that wasn't such a major part of beekeeping.
I'm Sabrina, and my guest is Chris Hill, and we are on the main street of Yellow Springs, Ohio, in front of the Emporium on Xenia Avenue, and we are talking about beekeeping. Chris is part of Nonstop, which is an art institute here in Yellow Springs. So my guest is Chris, and we're talking about bees and her beekeeping. So why is it then that bees who are part of a domestic hive, why are they less susceptible to this virus? Or is it a virus you're talking about?
Well, it's actually the Varroa mites. But
The mites. Hi, are you waiting to... Okay, great. It'll just be a couple of minutes. Yeah.
The beekeepers have to treat them with something or you know, there's other ways of dealing with it besides treating them chemically, but there's also non-chemical ways of dealing with it. But you have to do something to try to keep the Varroa population down.
And Chris, before you go, because I know people are waiting to join Trailer Talk, how many bees do you have at this point? How many hives?
I have two hives, and I think each hive has about 40,000 bees or something. I don't know. It's like 20. I think they usually estimate 20,000 to 40,000 bees. I think maybe mine are like 30,000 bees in two hives.
Wow. So about 60,000 bees, two hives, and you said the bees from.
These are Carniolan bees from Slovenia, originally from Slovenia.
From Slovenia.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, they're hereditary.
Yes, absolutely. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I think this is great.
All right.
I really appreciate talking with you. Thank you.
Oh, likewise.
I've been speaking with artist Chris Hill in Yellow Springs, Ohio, about beekeeping and her art practice that explores public and private space using bees as part of the investigation. We spoke about her art practice and beekeeping on Xenia Avenue in Yellow Springs, Ohio, last fall. On August 19th of this year, 2017, it's National Honey Bee Day. This year the theme is, for a natural high, smoke some bees. The mission of the National Honey Bee Day is to educate the public about beekeeping and the importance of bees. There are many areas across the nation with prohibitive or outright bans on beekeeping. So public outreach and education are crucial in expanding and even maintaining the ability to keep bees. According to the organizers of National Honey Bee Day, the program started with a very simple concept: bring together beekeepers, bee associations, as well as other interested groups to connect with the communities to advance beekeeping. By working together and harnessing the efforts that so many already accomplish, and by using a united effort one day a year, the rewards and message is magnified many times over. We encourage bee associations, individuals, and other groups to get involved. The program is free and open to all. The event was started in 2009 by a small group of beekeepers who petitioned for and obtained a formal proclamation by the USDA honoring honeybees and beekeeping. To find out more about National Honey Bee Day, please go to www.nationalhoneybeeday.com. Other sites with information about bees and beekeeping are the Backyard Beekeepers Association in Connecticut, www.backyardbeekeepers.com, and about urban beekeeping, backyardbees.net and backwardsbeekeeping.com. And both of those sites have a lot of resources throughout the United States. Here's to the beautiful, important honeybee from myself and the Beeline Travel Trailer. From the kitchen table out on the road, I'm Sabrina Artel. Special thanks to Michael Caselli and the entire Nonstop Art Institute of Yellow Springs community who welcomed me to their town and who invited me to share Trailer Talks, Frack Talk, Marcellus Shale Water Project on Xenia Avenue, the main street of Yellow Springs, Ohio, last fall. And I'm excited to share with you more of the conversations we had there. Thanks for joining me for Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. The music for the show, Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Be recordings from Dobroid, Digifish Music, and Ben Boncan from freesound.org. Trailer Talk is produced by Sabrina Artel. For more information, please visit trailertalk.net. Special thanks to WJFF Radio Catskill and the numerous people who have donated their time, resources, and conversations to make Trailer Talk possible. Thank you all who joined me in these conversations. I'm Sabrina Artel. Safe travels.